Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. If you're just joining us, we are hearing a presentation from Carissa Fralin on the topic of access to behavioral health services as a matter of social justice. Fralin's presentation was part of Manchester University's Values, Ideas, and the Arts series, and we now continue with Fralin speaking about the challenges faced by those dealing with mental illness.
So let's talk about a little bit about what we know. So we know that people with a severe persistent mental health issue die 25 years earlier than the rest of us. Largely, this is due to the fact that they have what are called comorbidities. They have other things going on. Most of the time, it's hypertension, diabetes, obesity. Those are the three biggies. Oftentimes, it's other things too. They have difficulty managing all of those parts of their physical health, so they end up dying younger. Half of the people that go in to see their primary care provider and get a referral to go see a behavioral health provider or a specialist in the area they need never make it to the first appointment. 67% of people, of all of us who have a behavioral health issue, never go get treatment for it, ever, anywhere, of any kind. But here's the good news. 80% of people that have a behavioral health issue go see their doctor at least once a year. That's where we can catch them. That's where we can screen them. That's where we can start talking to them about what's happening in their life, what's going on beyond the physical part. So let's talk a little bit about some ugly stuff so that we can get to the positive pieces. This is the 2016 Becker Hospital Review of Suicides by State. This is where Indiana ranks, about 25th, about middle of the road. Not great, not terrible. This is where Colorado ranks. We are always in the top 10. For the last decade, Colorado has been one of the top 10 states for suicides. It's a huge problem in our state. And it leads into the next piece, which is stigma. So this is a tough one because we don't like to talk about mental health. People don't like to admit they have a mental health issue. They don't like to talk about their depression or their anxiety. Sometimes we don't even recognize it within ourselves. In Colorado, the seventh way, the number seventh way, that people kill themselves is by handguns or some kind of weapon. Mostly, this is Caucasian men, ages 25 to 44. They are typically the ones who kill themselves in this way. Colorado is a big gun state. We don't have a whole lot of regulation around weapons, and so it's an issue. It happens more in rural areas than it does in the metropolitan areas because there's not one farmer who probably doesn't have at least one gun somewhere. So one of the things that Colorado has done through the Department of Public Health and Environment is start to engage gun shop owners into behavioral health. It's not primary care, but it's a place to catch people. If there's a person coming in who's in that high-risk category, gun shop owners are being trained about how to talk to that person about, is this a possible suicide? Colorado is known for skiing, mountains, lovely places to go hike, nice weather, pretty tolerable winters. But we're also known for some pretty ugly stuff, like mass shootings. This is a picture of the Aurora movie theater where an untreated man with schizophrenia killed 12 people. It was national news. This, of course, is Columbine High School. 20 years ago, this was one of the first mass school shootings that occurred in our country that made national news. I had the opportunity several months ago now to see the mother of one of the gentlemen, one of the young men who participated in that massacre, Dylan. And Dylan Klebold and his friend Eric Harris walked into the school in trench coats with semi-automatic rifles and killed 13 people. And then they killed themselves. To hear Sue talk about the story, they knew something was a little off, but they took him to see people. They took Dylan to go get therapy, to go talk to people, to go see what was happening with him. And people did not see the triggers, even professionals did not see what was happening. So sometimes, even when we are looking in the right place, we're going to the right people, we don't catch everything. But if we have more access, if we have more hands-on, more people assessing, we're going to probably find ways to catch more of those folks. Normally, when we think about mental health, mental illness, this is sort of the image that pops in our head. We think about the people who are most severe, people who are struggling with schizophrenia, people who are connected to violence. Most people who have a mental health issue are not violent at all, but those are the ones that come to the forefront, right? Those are the ones that we hear about. Those are the ones that make the national news and that we watch over and over and over again. So we think about how severe mental health is, and that's why it's easy for us to say, well, that's not me. I'm not like that. However, if you look around this room at five people, one of them is dealing with some behavioral health issue. One out of five people in this country deal with it regularly. Mostly it's depression, anxiety. It's normally not major mental health or behavioral health issues, but all of us at some point have dealt with something. If you've lost a loved one, you've grieved, you've been depressed, you've been sad. If you've had a tragic event happen in your life, if you've dealt with stress and had a panic attack, all of those things count. It just doesn't mean that you're severe or non-functioning. This is what it looks like, right? We see people happy and smiling. This is what mental illness looks like. It's all covered up. We put on a mask, we pretend like it's not happening, but it's there anyway. And so one of the things that we can do to talk with people about mental health and talk about what that means and talk about it not being something that we need to be embarrassed about or ashamed of dealing with is to have regular, free-for-all access to screening and to talking about it. And so in Colorado, what we've chosen to do is integrate it into primary care. Primary care doctors often are trained in thinking about just the medical sides of people, right? They ask about what's wrong. They want to diagnose it. They want to give a medication. They want to hear stories. They want to know their patients. They want to get to know who they are and what's happening in their lives, but only to a certain extent. And then after that, what they want is to move on to the next patient, because most clinics, again, fee-for-service world, most clinics only have 20-minute spots. And the doctor's probably in there for an average of 7 minutes to see you and to spend time with you. So that's where we integrate behavioral health into clinics. The other piece of, switching gears a little bit, the other piece of primary care and looking at what people are doing and what's happening in their lives and how they are maybe not connected to their health issues are the social determinants of health. Social determinants of health are things like housing, food, money, living in poverty, access to care at all. So think about it. At the beginning, when I talked about the scenario of the patient who got diagnosed with diabetes, what were some of his reasons for not being able to change his diet or add in exercise? Things like, I have to take 2 buses to work. That's a transportation issue. That's a social determinant of health. Things like, I have to pick up my kids from school. Things like, I have to work 2 jobs. All those kinds of pieces fit together and create a whole picture of what this man's life is like. trying to function, trying to keep his family afloat. Those are pieces that are important. If you're a single mother with two children and you don't know where their next meal is coming from, what your blood pressure is matters not to you. You do not care about that, right? You care about how you're going to feed your children. That's what social determinants of health are, and that's where this becomes a real social justice issue, because you're not just looking at the person, you know, just take your high blood pressure medicine and buy a cuff and, you know, measure your blood pressure every day. Well, that's low on the priority list sometimes. You're not going to always be able to get somebody to do that unless you're talking about what the other things are that are going on in their life that's keeping them from being able to find a way to take care of themselves. So what does access look like? Well, that depends on where you are. One of these is a picture of a rural health center. In Colorado, we have a highway that runs right down the center of the state, and that highway is where most people live. From top to bottom, that's where people live. The rest of the state is pretty much rural communities. Now, if you're in a mountain rural community, you got some resources because those are ski places and lots of tourists come there. If you're on the southeast corner or the northeast corner or any of the corners of our state, you're in a very different world. Lots of ranches and farming, and there's miles between people, and resources are slim. So what this community did was they put in a storefront on their main street. This is in Rocky Ford, Colorado, and they have, you can kind of see a little umbrella on their front window there, and it just says that they're a health group. What they have inside that storefront is a doctor, a nurse, and two medical assistants. They have a substance use disorder provider, and they have a behavioral health provider who does therapy. If you drive into that and park in front of that store, nobody knows why you're there. Nobody knows. They know your car is parked there because it's a small town and everybody knows your car. You know nothing about what that's like, right? But so what they've done is just hide it a little bit, right? It takes away some of that stigma that we talked about. If you're embarrassed to go and see somebody for a behavioral health issue, you don't want to be having your car parked in front of the community mental health center because you can't have people knowing that you're going there. So they made it look different and they added some additional services, and there it is. The other building is a huge hospital in northern Denver, actually near our family home. And they are an all-inclusive place. They've got a hospital, they've got, including a maternity ward, they've got a primary care clinic, they've got all kinds of specialties, and it's all in one building, one-stop shopping. So you can go in, you can get anything you need, except behavioral health. They had no behavioral health providers in this entirely new, this brand new, beautiful building, not one substance use disorder or behavioral health provider in the whole place, until the primary care practice became integrated. So what does integration look like? Integration can look a number of ways. They call it the levels of integration, but not one is better than the other. They all work fine for integrating care. Just depends on what the needs of your community are. So coordinated integration looks like when you have a building, an office building, that has a primary care provider on one floor and a behavioral health provider on the other floor, and they're not connected in any way. And so what they do then is start a conversation, and they start coordinating their care of people. So the physician can send people up two floors to see the behavioral health provider, and they can talk to each other because they've signed agreements and the patients agree and so forth and so on. And so they've coordinated their care. They're sort of in the same place, but not really. But they're still coordinated. They're talking to each other. They're making sure that each other has what the other needs in order to provide care for the patient. Co-located is when you have a behavioral health provider in the clinic who is available to come and see people right then on the spot, so there's no referral. It's a warm handoff. And so that person goes and says, hey, behavioral health provider, I need you to come see this patient. But they work for different people. So it might be a collaborative between a primary care practice and a community mental health center, for example. And they're housed, the community mental health center providers are housed in the clinic, but they work for different people. That's co-located. And fully integrated means that the clinic hires their own. They hire their own behavioral health provider. And that behavioral health provider works for the clinic, bills for the clinic, and then treats people there in the clinic, right when they're talking about it. Integration also is not usually full-on therapy. If a person really needs more than that to deal with their substance use issue or their mental health issue, normally what they do is they do end up referring that out. In a clinic, they do what's called brief intervention. Brief intervention is where a patient might need to see somebody 4 to 6 times for about a half an hour each to kind of work through a particular issue, maybe get over a hump, maybe in conjunction with an antidepressant, let's say. If they need more than that, then the behavioral health provider refers out. But because it's a behavioral health provider, what they're doing is referring out as a warm handoff as well. They're calling up the community mental health center, for example, and saying, hey, we have this patient here. I'm calling with her. We'd really like to get her an appointment. What can you do? How can you help us out? How can we work together? Again, trying to coordinate that care a little differently. This is another couple ways that access can look. The building with the car in front of it is one of our community mental health centers. It's in Jefferson County, which is a metro Denver suburb. And what they've done is they've connected with a federally qualified health center, or basically a clinic that is called a safety net. It provides care to anybody, whether they have insurance or not. They take largely Medicaid clients. And they've connected with the community mental health center and created a full-on clinic that has all of those services in one place. So when a person walks into that building, they could be going to the clinic, they could be going to see the behavioral health person, they could be going in for substance use treatment, a lot like the rural clinic that we saw. So again, kind of all in that one place. And we have 4 of those in SIM, where we have community mental health centers who have connected with a federally qualified health center and are providing all of that care together in one spot. Next to it is a local public health agency. We often don't think of a local public health agency as someone who provides care or can provide integrated care, but they do. That's oftentimes, particularly in rural communities, where people go to get their kids immunized, to get a flu shot. Sometimes they go in just to see the nurse that works there. So a lot of public health places that are local and active in their communities, they are seeing patients kind of one-on-one, and it's a good time to do screening. But they also are connected to the communities at large. And Colorado's suicide problem is a real issue for local public health agencies. They do a lot of work on stigma reduction, trying to help people feel like going to a mental health professional is okay, and that they can do that, and that it's going to be fine. When we talk about access, when we talk about getting people what they need in behavioral health, for their behavioral health needs in primary care, we're not talking about all things being equal. Because we know that people with money get better care. We know that they have more access. We know that they have better insurance. We know that they're able to get what they need when they need it. We know this. So what we're talking about with accessing behavioral health in primary care is really equity. How do we catch the folks that need the two boxes to stand on so they can see the game? How do we catch those people, right? All things being not equal, but equitable, which is what social justice is really about. So when our gentleman from the beginning comes in and says, I still feel terrible and I don't know what to do, I don't know how to feel better, what he needs is a behavioral health provider to sit with him and to talk through one step at a time. So if you don't have the ability, let's start with food. You don't have the ability to get fresh food, let's talk that through. How can we help that happen for you? What needs to change? What could be different? How can we fit it in? Take care of that. Next week, okay, how did that go? Let's talk it through. Then comes exercise. How do we build that in? That's how it goes, step by step, one step at a time to get it figured out. Because he's not going to get a personal trainer at the gym, right? He's not going to have access to a Whole Foods or whatever to get whatever kind of food he needs. Like, he's got a whole different life going on. So that's where that equity piece really becomes quite important. The other thing I would say about integration is that it really is a necessary piece for any kind of medical care that's going to happen. So if you are in a field, if you're pre-med, if you want to go to the pharmacy school, if you're learning about how to take care of people medically, you need to be aware that behavioral health issues are impacting them. Your patients need more than just the medical side. It cannot be siloed anymore. So if you've got a patient that comes in and they seem like they got it together and they're good and you can just send them on their way, I would take a second look there. Make sure that you've got somebody you can get them to if more is going on. Patients are good at hiding stuff, right? How many times have you been to the doctor and not told them everything that was going on? You told them most things, but maybe there were a few things you kept to yourself, right? We're good at that. So doctors need to be trained on how to know what they're hearing, right? And they need to have somebody else in the room with them or somebody else they can call into the room who definitely is trained on how to pick that up.
We'll be back with more from WBOI Presents after a short break. Thank you for listening to 89.1 WBOI.